Welcome to a new week at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It is Monday though. Brooke's here.
I'm here, yes. Brooke
Thomas,
how's it going? Hi. Where are we looking? We're looking here.
Bright
hi, I'm here.
Brooke, making me look just dreary by comparison.
I wore yellow over the weekend and I moved like too long ago to still be unpacking, but I had one box that still needed to be unpacked.
Your yellow box?
It was like hidden behind the couch. Mm-hmm. And I unpacked it, had a bunch of jackets and stuff in it. And so I found this one and was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm gonna rock it.
It's a color that's not often represented. I don't wear a lot of yellow.
Yes, but maybe right? So you didn't have anything to match me then, huh?
No. Green's the closest I got.
Okay.
Anyway, we do have a lot of news that we're gonna be getting to, including the G20 summit, Donald Trump's impromptu visit to North Korea, his comments on climate change and busing and Western liberalism. We're gonna ask and answer the question, what did the president know, if anything, cops planting drugs, and we've got Ivanka, and we've got a bunch of stuff. Conspiracy theories involving Kamala Harris. So that's a fun part of the election season that we're gonna get into. But we're gonna be starting off with the big foreign policy story of the day with Donald Trump and North Korea. Over the weekend, Donald Trump was in Japan and South Korea, and also other countries, because he decided to make a few last minute changes to his itinerary. We found out about this, as we always do, on Twitter with him tweeting, after some very important meetings, including my meeting with President Xi of China, I will be leaving Japan for South Korea with President Moon. While there, if Chairman Kim of North Korea sees this, I would meet him at the border DMZ just to shake his hand and say, hello? I don't know how else to pronounce a capital H hello with both a question mark and an exclamation point than hello?
This is so weird.
So in case the North Korean dictator sees this tweet, I'll be hanging out there, maybe swing by, you know?
I wouldn't even ask you if I could come over on Twitter.
If you did, that'd be
so weird.
It's like, hey Duterte, what you doing? Like, that's not how diplomacy, and also, by the way, it's a lie. The whole thing is a lie, this is not how they set it up. He didn't do that tweet wondering if maybe Kim would be interested, and then he'd look like a fool if they didn't meet. They had already planned to meet and he tweeted the thing. All of this is pageantry and reality TV. It's all BS, it's all made up.
Hey, let me do something that no other president has done for good reason, just on a whim. I'm just thinking.
However,
the fact that he thought that looks good though, that's part of this.
He's getting tons of positive press coverage from reporters who are like, I trust that the president's being honest on social media. I'm a very serious person, I make millions a year. That's what they're doing. But anyway, it happened, so now let's talk about it because it is historic. Trump traveled to the DMZ with South Korean President Moon Jae-in and met with troops stationed there before meeting Kim at a marker delineating the border between the two states. Technically making this historic in that while former presidents of the United States have traveled technically into North Korea, no sitting president has actually done that. And he did it, and tragically he's the president. So when you combine those two things, it is historic. The issue with that though is that he's not happy to just have the meeting. He has to pretend that it is an accomplishment, that it's historic because it was so complicated to do. And so he said over the weekend that Obama desperately wanted to go in North Korea, he just couldn't get it done. There's no evidence that that's the case. People working with Obama say that he never requested that or anything. And the thing is, if Obama had wanted it, the North Korean leadership desperately wants to be normalized on the world stage.
They would
let literally anyone in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just, it's such a simple thing that you can do, sure. And maybe, as we've said every time we've covered different wrinkles in this ongoing friendship between those two, maybe someday it will bear fruit. But simply giving the guy what he wants, that's not some massive accomplishment. You didn't just summit Everest off of that.
Right, there's no, this does nothing. Like this man won't follow any rules. He completely abuses and he essentially runs a countrywide jail. You can't leave if you want to, unless
Trump
you're
can,
rich and part, right, Trump
not
can.
The population. Yeah, exactly.
This is, yeah.
But I understand some people will be frustrated with this because they're like, literally anything that looks like diplomacy is a good thing. Why are you discounting it? And I get that, it's better than him bombing more people, I agree. But I'm not simply gonna buy into all the propaganda that him and the White House are spinning.
Right, any action, like completely ignoring how the US has interacted and not really interacted with this man, with his regime, with his father for history.
Yeah.
is not a good thing.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
are a lot of things that are historic, that are part of history. Slavery is part of history.
Mm-hmm. It was historic.
Biden not supporting busing, history. Mm-hmm. It's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Well, this is terrible.
Yeah, exactly. And look again, if they get some kind of substantive deal, then obviously that's a good thing. But we're not stupid and we're not naive. We don't believe, or at least I'm not speaking for anybody other than myself. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that this is the road to go down. And while every time I bring that up, every time this story gets in the news, people are like, why don't you just trust him and his friendship? Every time another meeting goes by and another meeting goes by and nothing is actually accomplished, I think what I've been saying kind of makes more sense. How many meetings have we now had between them? And what has actually been accomplished? Okay, let's bring up a graphic,
they
a bullet point
kill
list.
Otto
Hold on, I wanna give credit. Okay. So we're gonna bring up a bullet point list of all of what's been accomplished.
Okay.
Sorry, we can't because nothing has been accomplished.
Oh, God,
they've had
funny.
Their meetings and that's great, but they still have their nuclear arsenal. Donald Trump still has the sanctions on them, which literally he could get rid of in a moment's notice if he wanted to. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But the idea is there's been very simple things that each side says they want and we are no closer to having it.
Right.
We're closer to them exchanging yeah. Christmas cards, I guess, but other than that, we're no closer to any substantive change to the security situation on the Korean Peninsula.
Nothing ever matters, even his base. There was so much like some anti-Obama like resentment when Otto Warmbier was imprisoned mm-hmm. there, and then they killed this kid. Mm-hmm. And now the president who was supposed to kind of save them, who was kind of leading that charge of anti-Obama rhetoric around that, is buddying up with this guy and yeah. chose to step foot in that country, which means more than, you know, just, oh, he just visited a country no one else would go and visit. There's yeah. a reason.
Yeah.
This man does not deserve this type of attention, this type of relevance.
Or at the very least, not without giving something up. Mm-hmm. Because while I said jokingly that nothing has been achieved, that's not technically true. Something has been achieved. With each one of these meetings, Kim Jong-un gets what he wants, which right. is to be presented to the world as a leader who is fit to meet with the US president and conceivably other people. He's been getting that over and over in all these meetings. Mm-hmm. We've gotten nothing. They haven't done anything in regard to their nuclear program. And maybe they will. And if they do, we're going to play some, we're going to have fireworks in the studio and we're going to play big celebratory music and that'll be great. But we do have to evaluate the track record. And so far, it's not moving in the direction of progress.
All right.
Now, we do have another weird angle on this, so I want to turn briefly to something else. Donald Trump went to meet with Kim Jong-un, but he didn't go alone. He brought Tucker Carlson, obviously. I mean, why wouldn't you? He's a pundit on Fox News. Why bring a diplomat when you can bring Tucker Carlson?
When you can bring a TV host on your favorite channel.
Exactly.
All right.
It would be like if Obama brought me. I guess it's cool, I'll go, but I don't see how exactly I'm helping. But Tucker was a person there, and so he can give a first person account of what he saw there. And what he saw there, and what we're gonna hear in a couple of video clips is proof that he's an incredibly immoral, possibly evil person. And second of all, had no business actually being there. But you're gonna see that in just a second. So first, here is his evaluation of the dictator, having seen him up close.
He was breathing like an emphysema patient. I'm not saying it to be insulting, but he was breathing in a labored way, like he was out of breath. Mm. And, you know, even allowing for the historic nature of it, which I'm sure played a role in his breathlessness, that my take as a non-physician was this is a very unhealthy guy, very unhealthy. So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Again, I'm hardly qualified to diagnose someone's medical condition,
sure.
but I mean, but that was the first thing I thought. This guy is in very bad health.
Okay, that's the first thing he thought. He also went on at length. We could show you other clips of him talking about how heavy he was breathing. He kept coming back to that.
He's talking about Kim.
Yes.
Okay.
It's hard to tell exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so.
Was he still there when he was saying this?
What do you mean? No. He was calling in Fox News and everything. But okay, so you make the weird move that you're gonna bring a pundit to this historic event.
Okay.
And what he brings back is an evaluation that Kim breathes weird. Like, okay, we're gonna move on.
Okay.
Here's another issue with bringing a pundit like Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson wants to pretend that I don't always agree with Donald Trump. I'm not Sean Hannity, I'm an independent thinker. But look at the way that he talks about Donald Trump. He cannot help the adulation, the weird like fawning love that he has for Trump to creeping, even when he's not intending for it to be there, which you're going to see in this video.
What's Kim's motive in this? I mean, my sense, again, this is, you know, just pop psychologizing, but just standing there for an hour watching, I think he was probably a little bit overwhelmed by Trump, who towers over him and who is a very large man. I mean, you're going to forget that. But standing next to Kim, I mean, he seemed to kind of dominate him, and there is a kind of magnetism and you know, real aggression to Trump. It didn't feel exactly like peers. It felt like, you know, maybe an older brother, younger brother kind of situation. That's part of it. But I also think that there are, you know, that there are real national interests here. And the main one is getting underneath, out from underneath some of these sanctions, which, you know, makes it really hard for, you know, to govern a country.
So there's the way he's being dominated by Trump. Trump's a very large guy. I mean, we saw the pictures, he's a couple inches taller than him. He wasn't towering over him. And yes, he's a large guy. They're both incredibly overweight individuals.
Right,
we
I
get
don't know
that.
What, yeah.
There was a lot of heavy breathing in that meeting. But the idea that he's got this magnetism and this aggression to him. See, an irrational outsider can look at a couple of years of Trump interacting with foreign leaders and say that like a child, like a little out of control child, he attempts to physically bully people. And they can see that is not a positive, that is a very easy to see through tactic. And I'm sure many of the international leaders that Trump meets with can also see through that. But not Tucker Carlson, he's a millimeter deep there in his thinking. It's like, oh my God, he's got this magnetic personality. He's so aggressive. I can't imagine why he's physically trying to intimidate Kim Jong-un. And then, of course, you get into, he tried to talk a little bit about what Kim Jong-un actually wanted out of this meeting. And he demonstrated once again that this is a guy with no expertise whatsoever in foreign policy, in particular, the concerns of the North Korean regime. Yes, they don't want sanctions. Literally nobody who's being sanctioned wants sanctions. That is not some sort of astute political analysis that you needed to be on location to provide. But that's just the appetizer, because with his weird, shallow, fawning praise of Donald Trump and bizarre critiques of Kim Jong-un, that's not the issue with Tucker Carlson. The issue with Tucker Carlson is that he's at his core a messed up person when it comes to imperialism, white supremacy, and those things are going to creep into his commentary as well. Here he is talking about the regime itself.
There's no defending the North Korean regime, which is a monstrous regime. It's the last really Stalinist regime in the world. It's a disgusting place, obviously. And so there's no defending it. On the other hand, you know, you got to be honest about what it means to lead a country. It means killing people, not on the scale that the North Koreans do, but a lot of countries commit atrocities, including a number that we're closely allied with. So, you know, I'm not a relativist or anything, but it's important to be honest about that. And it's not necessarily a choice between, you know, the evil people and the great people. It's a choice most of the time between the bad people and the worst people. That's just kind of the nature of life and certainly the nature of power. And I do think that's how the president sees it. He's, you know, he's far less sentimental about this stuff and maybe, I think, more realistic about it. And this is, I don't agree with everything that Trump says, but this is one thing I do agree with. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a kind of Samantha Power, you know, dorm room, like, oh, they're so mean. And it's kind of silly and stupid and not helpful. Like, in the end, what matters is what's good for the United States. And you deal with bad people a lot of the time in order to help your own country. And that's kind of the way I think Trump sees it.
I mean, there's a million different issues with that. I mean, first of all, go back to Obama interacting with world leaders and see if Tucker Carlson had the same approach to interacting with people like that. But the fundamental issues there, first of all, he portrays anyone who has any issue with the mass murder of literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, as silly and stupid and not helpful. But the issue is there, he is pretending that he's just an outside observer, that he has no vested interest. He's just saying the world is filled with bad people and sometimes you have to work with them. That's an easy thing to agree to. Obviously, sometimes, like they say, you can't make peace with your allies, you only make peace with your enemies. Everybody gets that. But what he does in his commentary, night after night, is tell people that not only do you have to work with those people, but you should not attempt to change them in any way. If we have influence over these countries, we shouldn't use them. So if MBS is sawing apart journalists, don't try to get him to stop doing that. Just sell him as many weapons as possible. If you're interacting with Duterte, don't try to get him to stop killing journalists. Joke about fake news and then get some sort of security deal with him or something like that. The idea is that you have bad people in the world And that's just the way it's going to be. We can kill people, they can kill people. You know, it's realistic to assume that. We should never work for a better world. That is what Tucker Carlson is actually working towards, not just observing as he's, you know, on that meeting.
Yeah, but he said something just right at the top of his comments. It means killing people, not at the level of North Korea. So right there, then what you're saying is irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you're also talking about the level of North Korea. That's just what we're talking about here. And so if what you're saying is not at that level, it doesn't have anything to do with that necessarily, then why are you saying it? Mm-hmm. This is corny. This is a bad thing that the president stepped foot in North Korea, that he shakes hands and pals along with this man. Mm-hmm. This is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, other countries commit atrocities. Yes, we know that. That's why the whole Russia thing is weird for us. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
well,
what
his
I
interactions
mean?
With yeah. a lot of people are
right,
weird.
Right, a lot of, right.
Yes, a lot of countries do commit atrocities. The US kills a lot of people. We mm-hmm. certainly agree there. Let's not do it. Let's stop. Let's not wantonly bomb people. That would be a great start. And then we can use that moral position that we will have achieved to try to get other countries to not do it. Because after all, we're not just in a world of Saddam Husseins and Kim Jong-uns and Dutertes and Putins. We've got Norway and we've got Sweden and we've got Denmark. And we've got dozens and dozens of other countries across South America and Africa and Europe and all over the place right. that don't commit atrocities like this, that have demanded more from their leaders. And I have a feeling that they probably don't give lofty positions in media to people like Tucker Carlson, who attempt to scrape every bit of empathy and compassion and a desire for a better world out of their citizens. They demand more of their media, and thus then they demand more of their politicians. But instead, we're surrounded by people like Tucker Carlson, and not just on TV. Now we're bringing them to our meetings. Right. Anyway, the whole thing is incredibly frustrating. There was no reason for him to be there. I don't want to talk more about Tucker Carlson. It's just that he's so damn influential, and it bothers me so much.
He
and
is
I
very
get
influential.
So recently he got a lot of credit for being against the strikes on Iran, which is great. You know, he for whatever reason has influence over the president. That's awesome. But you are deluding yourself if you think that that represents anything approaching an actual opposition to needless war. He just doesn't like this war. He thinks that they're savages, they're primitives, that's what he's called people from this region, and he doesn't think that there's anything for us to get out of it. But if he did think there was something for us to get out of it, then bombs away and kill as many Iranians as you want. Because as he said in that video, what matters is what's best for America. Not for Iranians, not for civilians around the world, not for the people that we've historically killed. He doesn't actually care about those people. And so your ally today in opposing one strike is not necessarily going to be there the next time Donald Trump gets ornery and decides to start dropping bombs. I think we can be a little bit more serious in our analysis.
All right.
Anyway, we've gone way
Let's
over.
Take a break.
I apologize. We're going to take a short break.
You need the break too. Yeah, Tucker Carlson, he does it to a lot of people. If you're smart, Tucker Carlson's going to do that to you.
Exactly. He's not your ally. He's not your ally. He's not your ally. Anyway, we're going to come back with Ivanka. So we're probably not going to be frustrated, right? We'll see.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
During last last week's second night of debates, Kamala Harris had a couple of great moments, including a long interaction with Joe Biden about his historic support, or I should say opposition for busing and support for the segregationists who hated it. And because of that, she's been doing quite well. A lot of people have been talking about her. At the moment, though, when that was happening, some people online were talking about her for all the wrong reasons. And we found out about this not because random trolls and bots were spreading it, but because the president's child spread a conspiracy theory or attacking Kamala Harris. This is what he tweeted. "Is this true? Wow." In response to Ali Alexander saying Kamala Harris is not an American black. She is half Indian and half Jamaican. "I'm so sick of people robbing American blacks like myself of our history. It's disgusting." And so
this is so stupid.
Immediately, tons and tons of accounts started spreading comments about this, oddly all using the exact same wording. It's weird how that worked out. And then, of course, because the president's son has no more fine-tuned apparatus for whether a comment makes sense or not, he spread it too. Why not? And so this is a version of basically it's about her birth as a half Indian, half Jamaican individual. How dare she talk about the experience of growing up black? What do you think about that?
It's ridiculous. She grew up black in America.
Yeah, but Don Jr. says, wow, if this,
right,
if this is
true. Right,
because it is true, she is, and, so wow.
Right, that's ridiculous. And also, shocker, you don't even, you can literally come from the Ivory Coast yesterday and be in America and still experience American racism.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nobody's
how could
like,
you say that?
Right, exactly.
Racists understand fine-tuned distinctions.
Like, wait a minute. I like you if you're black and you are from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I like you if you're black and you're from Johannesburg. I like you if you're black and you're from Ghana. You're from Jamaica? You from Haiti?
Mm-hmm.
I'm down with you. From the Dominican Republic? I'm down with you. But if you're from Mississippi,
yeah, this is
can't use
moronic.
My water fountain. This is nuts. Like what?
So the idea, I don't want to give any specific credit or even discredit to the individual who started this ridiculous thing, but they're not
it's
some
just
random
racist.
Person.
It's ridiculous. There's no.
But it's also it's yeah. a far right operative who spreads things like this. It's
okay.
not some sort of organic thing.
You're talking about Trump
really,
Jr.?
No, that too. but no, the person he's retweeting. It's not some authentic, genuine belief that this individual has that Donald Trump Jr. just co-opted.
Even if it was, it would
tactic,
be a racist,
a
authentic belief.
Exactly. It's awful yeah. in both cases, but it's also disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thankfully, people did stick up for Kamala Harris as a new generation of Trump spread birth conspiracy theories about them. With Bernie Sanders saying Donald Trump Jr. is a racist too, shocker. Joe Biden said the same forces of hatred rooted in birtherism that questioned Barack Obama's American citizenship and even his racial identity are now being used against Senator Kamala Harris. It's disgusting and we have to call it out when we see it. Racism has no place in America. Elizabeth Warren said the attacks against Kamala Harris are racist and ugly. We all have an obligation to speak out and say so. And it's within the power and obligation of tech companies to stop these vile lies dead in their tracks.
That's a good point.
Especially when they're being spread by bot networks using the exact same wording. And Cory Booker said Kamala Harris doesn't have blank to prove. So
right, he sums it up just real quick. Just
that's the best one.
Yeah, it's the best one. Just get to the point. She doesn't have anything to prove.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much about this that is so frustrating. Also, that this is all coming as if her bringing up Biden's issues with segregation, which are it's a racist belief,
mm-hmm.
is just a talking point. It was just a talking point. It doesn't affect her. It's just a talking point. It was racist of her to bring it up. Also, she's not an American black. She doesn't know what that's like. So it's okay as long, like what? None of it makes any sense. It's mm-hmm. an issue that needed to be talked about. It was important that it was brought up during the debate. And irrelevant to all of that, she's black.
Mm-hmm.
Move on.
Yeah.
She's black, she's Indian, she can identify with whatever she wants. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I also think it's like, it's weird how there's always a weird form of like having your racist cake and eating it too, both with Barack Obama and Kamala Harris, that you can be simultaneously mm-hmm. black enough for them to hate for your race,
right.
but not black enough to ever talk about it with authenticity or believability.
Yeah, but it all comes back to being black enough for them to hate you because
mm-hmm.
they just don't want them to talk. They don't want them to speak. They don't want them to win. It's bothersome.
Mm-hmm.
This is ridiculous. It's so racist. And you know, pretty soon we're going to get to the point that we were back then. We're going to have the first lady. We're going to have, she wasn't the first lady back then. We're going to have Melania Trump on some network television show spouting this and mm-hmm. saying,
Asked about it, she will probably defend Donald Trump Jr., who, by the way, this is not even really worth reading, but his spokesperson, Andy Sarabian, said Don's tweet was simply him asking if it was true that Kamala Harris was half Indian because it's not something he had ever heard before.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that's probably what it was. That's probably what it was.
It's all so weird.
And the thing, like, I bring this up to some extent because this is what the election season is going to be like. People just spread these ridiculous things, and if it makes you feel good to retweet it, you just do. You don't think about it, whether it actually makes any sense, whether you're being manipulated. This is the first of many things. We're going to have deep fakes, and people are going to spread them as if they're serious quotes and everything. So just get ready to be deceived throughout the course of this primary.
And, like, does he not have Google? I mean, you know what? No, I'm not going to go there.
Don't even pretend.
I'm not going to pretend. You're right. No, you're right.
They're all lying.
But yeah, this is racist and it's gross. And it also undermines why she, by many accounts, won that debate the second night. Because now we're talking about this and we have to, she doesn't have to prove that she's black. We shouldn't even have to talk about this, but we have to because the president's son is spouting a racist conspiracy theory to his millions of however many of followers.
I agree.
People who are retweeting it. And it's, you know, this is upsetting.
Last point for me, the person who started this, completely disingenuous. Donald Trump Jr., completely disingenuous. So I want to be the third. The reason that Donald Trump Jr. spread this is because Trump supporters are motivated by economic anxiety.
Oh my gosh, bye.
That's why they support Donald
Trump. Cut his mic.
Anyway, we gotta take a short break. We come back. More.
Something.
This weekend, Donald Trump was in Japan at the G20 summit. And during that, he had a press conference. And I listened to some of the questions he was asked and some of his answers. And it made me think of that classic thing, the what did the president know and when did he know it? Except with Trump, it was more of a does he know anything and is he feeling okay? Because some of his answers, it's not just that he doesn't understand things like what a tariff is, which is concerning enough. He doesn't know basic terms that are thrown around casually in political conversation. We're gonna show you a couple of things here, and I want you to, as we do, evaluate what the president actually knows. The first is on the concept of Western liberalism. What does Trump think that term means?
His comments to the Financial Times right before arriving here was that Western style liberalism is obsolete. I know you probably haven't read the interview.
Well, again, he may feel that way. I mean, he sees what's going on. And I guess if you look at what's happening in Los Angeles, where it's so sad to look, and what's happening in San Francisco and a couple of other cities, which are run by an extraordinary group of liberal people. I don't know what they're thinking, but he does see things that are happening in the United States that would probably preclude him from saying how wonderful it is. At the same time, he congratulated me, as every other leader of every country did, for what we've done economically, because we probably have the strongest economy we've ever had. And that's a real positive. But I'm very embarrassed by what I see in some of our cities, where the politicians are either afraid to do something about it, or they think it's votes, or I don't know what, Peter, I don't know what they're thinking. But when you look at Los Angeles, when you look at San Francisco, when you look at some of the other cities, and not a lot, but you don't want it to spread. And at a certain point, I think the federal government maybe has to get involved. We can't let that continue to happen to our cities.
I feel the obligation, we don't have the rights, but I feel the obligation to play the moderator responding to Adam Sandler and Billy Madison. At no point in that long rambling, Western style liberalism is not what liberals do on the West Coast of the United States, you moron. It's not San Francisco, it's not LA, it's not like, oh, in San Diego, I see them starting to take power. That's not what the term means, and the president should know that.
Right, and then what is he even saying? What is he talking about? So, like, we get past the fact that he obviously thinks that he's talking about the Western part of this country, that he doesn't know what the globally what Western means. That's fine. We'll move past that.
Or liberalism.
But what is he talking about? What is he talking about that's going wrong? There are a lot of problems within Los Angeles, a lot of problems within San Francisco. There's not enough housing in San Francisco. It costs too much, sure. But what is he talking about that the federal government would have to step in? He said, look at what's going on in Los Angeles. Look at what's going on in San Francisco. At some point, the federal government may have to step in and what is he talking about?
I don't know. I think that you're being too nice because I don't know why you would assume that he is talking about anything.
Right,
whenever
I'll
he says, look at what's going on in blank, if he could be specific, wouldn't he? Honestly,
no, that's a good point.
And I don't think
that's
that he can
point.
Be.
All right,
but
it's
I just,
crazier.
I understand, and I guess this is going out to the five Trump supporters that are gonna see this. Like, I get that you're okay with the fact that he doesn't understand how tariffs work and who pays them and all that. But don't you want your president to know what a term like Western style liberalism actually means? Like, isn't that, like, you know what that means. You know, you're not the president. You're not in elected office. You're not a 75-year-old. But you know what it means. Shouldn't you expect that the president would too? But honestly, I think that we have a lower bar that he will still bang his head against. So busing has been in the news thanks to Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, all of that. This one, we're gonna have to evaluate. But does the president know what we mean when we talk about busing?
Just wanted to follow up quickly on the question about busing. Do you see it as a viable way of integrating schools? Does that relate to the policy that you're
going to unveil? Well, it has been something that they've done for a long period of time. I mean, you know, there aren't that many ways you're going to get people to schools. So this is something that's been done. In some cases, it's been done with a hammer instead of a velvet glove. And, you know, that's part of it. But this has been certainly a thing that's been used over the... I think Vice President Biden had answered the question somewhat differently, it would have been a different result because they really did hit him hard on that one. But it is certainly a primary method of getting people to schools.
It's not as clear because he talked about the hammer, which makes it seem as if he gets that like there's differences in how it's been implemented in different parts of the world. But at the beginning and at the end, he talked about it as if we have an issue with buses.
He actually simply thinks that it's a mode of transportation and not a means of integration. And
he didn't use the word integration.
He didn't.
Or segregation. He didn't talk specifically about race.
About transportation. And then also the implications that come of his statement that sometimes it was used with a hammer and not with a velvet glove, as if it's a bad thing that the federal government has had to force certain areas to integrate schools. If that's a
I'm saying that if absurd. You're right and that's what he's saying, in that world, he understands what the term means
right.
at least.
Mm-hmm.
If he understands that what we're talking about is desegregation.
Right.
But from most of what he said there, it's not really clear that he knows that that's what we're talking about. And the thing is, he's not new, he's an old man. He was fully grown while national conversations were being had, political campaigns were being waged around busing. And he can't make it clear that a big topic that's been in the news for the past couple of weeks and was earlier because of Joe Biden, he can't really make clear that he knows what that means.
Right.
But I like things in threes. So really fast, we had him being a moron on Western style liberalism, probably at least ignorant on busing. What about on how stealth technology works?
F-35's the greatest fighter jet in the world. It's stealth, you can't see it. It's real hard to beat something when you can't see it.
Just to be clear, you can see it. And that, again, we don't know for sure. No one has ever asked him if he stood next to it and not been able to see it. But he does keep saying that you can't see it. And I just want to be clear. I mean, maybe this is a spoiler for our enemies.
He thinks
you can
stealth
see it.
Means invisible. And that's fascinating
not.
For me.
I think he thinks that Wonder Woman controls the Air Force or something.
Right.
She's flying around in see-through planes. Anyway. That's our president. Good job, America. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, more to get to. Donald Trump was speaking about climate change, or at least trying to. He said that that's what he was talking about, but a lot of what he said didn't really follow naturally in that area. And I want to tell you what he said, because it's really important for our ongoing fight against the climate crisis. He said, I'm not looking to put our companies out of business. I'm not looking to create a standard that is so high that we're going to lose 20 to 25% of our production. I'm not willing to do that. So look, of course, that statement itself is so loaded with assumptions, economic assumptions about what effect combating climate change would have. Nobody thinks that we're gonna cut 20 to 25% of our production. And many people think that there are indeed many, many high paying, awesome jobs to be made in dealing with climate breakdown. But that's the intro. That's not the stupidest thing he said on the topic, but just as an intro, Brooke, that's an idea of what he thinks about when he thinks about the crisis that is gripping our planet.
I don't even know what that means. What production?
I guess he thinks that factories are going
to
shut
down. That's how we have to deal with everything that he says. It has to start right there with, it's wild. He gets to talk in these general, everything is such a general statement, which could mean he has no idea what he's talking about, could mean he's not really talking about anything, could mean he's talking about something specific that we have to figure out.
Yeah, and look, bear in mind, we all know that previously he said that this is a Chinese hoax. And so that's the starting point for him to get to the science on this. In all likelihood, he's been fed some relatively simplistic talking points about how doing something about climate change is going to be bad for the economy. And do you really think that he looked into any deeper than that? I mean, he's a shallow thinker.
Just tell him it's going to slow down our production.
That's probably as far as it goes.
If somebody said that to you, would you say, wait, on what?
I would want some more information.
Okay.
Yeah, not our production of solar panels, certainly. Although his sanctions in that area certainly have. So that's the thing. That what he said so far, that's a relatively normal right-wing talking point against doing something about climate change. It's not particularly unique to him. What is unique is what he thinks measures of climate change are, or what he thinks we would use as a way to determine if the climate is changing. I could give you many different ways that we could look, the evidence that's provided to prove that the climate is actually changing in a negative way. But take a look at what he says. We have the cleanest water we've ever had. We have the cleanest air. You saw the reports come out recently. We have the cleanest air we've ever had. But I'm not willing to sacrifice the tremendous power of what we've built up over a long period of time and what I've enhanced and revived.
So if you are worried about
climate change, don't worry. We have clean air and we have clean water. Clean, I suppose, except for all the carbon that's been building up over the past 50 plus years.
Right, and the clean water, I'm beginning to think that is just a dig to all the marginalized communities across the country that are dealing with the absolute opposite of clean water.
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like this is being said on purpose. He has this obsession with crystal clean water, with clean water, and it's not true. At all, but it's even more harmful to so many different parts of our country. Like, he should be focused on who doesn't have clean water in America.
Yeah.
It should be embarrassing. And instead, he keeps saying we have crystal clean water. We don't, and you haven't made it any better.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm gonna go down that rabbit hole briefly in a second, but first. Our concern about climate breakdown has literally nothing to do with clean air or clean water. They are related concerns. They both have to do with the environment. They're both important and they can be tackled hand in hand. But the solution to one is not necessarily the solution to the other. They are related. I'll give him that. But even if it was true that we had clean air and we had clean water, that would not mean that the climate is not changing.
Right.
It would not mean that extreme weather events are not becoming more common. It would not mean that heat waves, the likes of which Europe is experiencing right now, are not becoming far, far more common. He, I think, wants to change the subject to something related, pollution, basically. Understand that they're not actually that closely tied together. But while we're on the subject, the US ranks poorly on smog pollution, which kills 24,000 Americans per year. On a scale from the cleanest to the dirtiest, the US is at 123 out of 195 countries measured. So if you are going to claim that we have the cleanest air, understand that it's true as long as you discount the first 122 countries. And 24,000 Americans die every year because of the pollution in our air. So let's not brag just too much there. Also, according to a study published last year in the Proceedings of the National Academies of Sciences, tens of millions of Americans are exposed to unsafe drinking water each year, which of course we understand because we talk about a variety of different contaminants all the time. Our air and water are not clean enough. That is a separate battle that we do need to wage, but at the same time, we can take climate change seriously. And the first step, if we are going to take it seriously, is we have to get somebody in office who is a serious person, which Donald Trump certainly is not. Okay, we're going to take a short break.
Let's
we come back. Police have been really, really awful in Florida lately while on film, and we're going to break it down for you after this.
I know. Okay.
It's yogurt.
How about this, though?
That is not mine. No, sir.
At least 37 people have filed federal or state lawsuits against this police officer here in this video. He has been fired for planting drugs in their cars in the state of Florida. Now, this police officer's name is Zach Wester, and an assistant state attorney named Christina Pumphrey actually started looking into him after what she says she noticed was his name was the arresting officer on a disproportionate number of drug arrests. And specifically, she says she started investigating him. And as she watched the body camera footage from Wester's arrest, Pumphrey grew concerned. His vehicle searches were not always conducted legally, and his written affidavits didn't always match what she saw in the video. She also says that she noticed the people's reactions in these arrest videos, they were odd. This is what she says. She says, it wasn't, okay, crap, I'm busted. She says it was, what do you mean? And then Pumphrey began looking a little more closely into Wester's arrest. So soon, he was pulled off patrol. There were, at this point though, here's the thing. There were more than 100 people who he had arrested at this time during his 2 years on the force. Now, all of these people, some were still out on bond. If their arrest had violated probation though, they were behind bars. Yet, she says the state attorney's office didn't immediately move to drop the cases. And at the time, she was getting an explicit instruction to not dismiss the cases, saying, I know these people are sitting in jail. I know the particular charges they're in jail on. They're either innocent of, based on the information I see, or there's no way I could take this in front of a jury. But I'm being told, just let them sit in jail. Now, he was fired. This officer Wester was fired after Pumphrey uncovered this video. It's a dash cam, a body cam, excuse me, video of when he pulled Teresa Odom over for a faulty brake light. And take a look at this here. He claimed to find meth in her trunk, but in the body cam video, you can see that he's hiding something in his hand. I mean, you can take a look at it. You're watching
worst
it there.
Worst magician ever.
Right. It's absolutely absurd. 119 cases had to be dropped eventually after this video was brought to light. And
does he know that there's a camera on his chest?
On obviously his chest. He does. Obviously he does. And so even worse, I just want to tell you this one more thing. Internally, so they dropped 119 cases, but Pumphrey says that the chief assistant state attorney, a man named Larry Basford, chastised her for sharing the video with the sheriff's office, saying he starts yelling over the phone, what was I doing looking through all the videos? Why in the world did I find the Teresa Odom video? Why was I looking for it and just having an absolute fit? She ended
That's
up quitting.
That's a weird reaction if it's justice is your goal.
Hello.
So obviously, I'm joking. He knows that the camera's there. Mm-hmm. So what that demonstrates is an unerring certainty that it would never be looked at.
Right.
So that if necessary, they could lose the footage mm-hmm. or the camera was broken or something. They could break it before they would be able to find the footage. They just were sure. Like, imagine breaking the law
119
times on film.
At least.
Knowing, I got this. I'm going to mm-hmm. be just fine. And also, by the way, even if they do find the footage, which they did thanks to this woman, mm-hmm. knowing that the higher ups are going to defend you, that they're going to attack the investigator rather than applaud her for weeding out one of the bad apples that you say you oppose, that it's not an institutional thing. It's just bad apples. But this is a demonstration that it is not, that they are protected from above.
Completely.
So now what, like, I would want to look into that person's history. What have they been involved in?
Exactly. And he's not in jail. This officer's not in jail. Mm-hmm. No charges have been filed against him.
But people have served jail time because of his crimes.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's horrendous.
And just the fact that it's more than 100 people. He, like, this could happen to anybody. Mm-hmm. This could happen to anybody.
Exactly.
And the people in charge there, not all of them at least, but there were at least one person in charge there that wasn't upset by what he was doing.
Yeah.
He's more upset that he got found out.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing is, like, when I see somebody like this, I think, well, God, they should just start going through all of the cameras. Now, obviously, that's an incredibly onerous task. How would you ever have the time to do it? But they also make it as difficult as possible to ever get access to this footage. So even if this investigator wanted to say, is this an institutional problem? Uh-huh. Have other people been doing this? It might be very difficult, not just time consuming, to ever find out who might have been breaking the law. And in the meantime, hundreds of people are sitting in jail because of the actions like this that are probably taking place around the country.
And they all have mugshots now. They all have arrest records. Sure, it was dismissed. Probably it can get it expunged, but they all have mugshots. They all have arrest records. They all have conversations that they've had to have with family members and with their employers.
Yeah.
I got arrested. They're saying this. I didn't do it. This is absurd.
Relationships are probably broken up and ruined because of this.
Yeah.
Like, Like, imagine a random person that you have never seen them doing meth all of a sudden arrested for meth. That would be weird. Like, if Brooke, if you were suddenly arrested, that would change my opinion a little bit.
Stop, I hope you
have a more exciting life than I thought you did.
Do meth.
No, it would be positive. I'm kidding. Obviously, this is horrendous and a demonstration that while body cameras are incredibly important, it doesn't fix the fundamental problems of police misconduct.
Exactly.
Thank you as always.
Thanks for
great to have you on. Thank you, everybody.
Fast forward. Bye.
See you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.